house like that. So it was, I think it was just somebody from the local sheriff or something like that that stopped him and said, you know, where do you need to go? And so they let him in because he said, well, I live right, you know, just right down the street. I mean, he said the really strange thing was when he walked in, you know, you walk in our back door and then there's three or four steps to get up into the main floor of the house. It was evident that the water had come about 3 inches from the main floor. Wow. And
so the whole basement was filled?
Yep, the entire basement was filled. By the time that he got there, it was to about the top of the bottom, about the top of the landing. I mean, so it started going down at least by that point. But he said it was very strange because you looked in the door and there was all this stuff floating. All my craft supplies and all the kids' toys and all of those things were all floating around. And then when you looked the other direction, the kitchen was there and it was all normal. And he said it was just, it was very, very surreal looking at it.
And where did the water come from? What was the path? You started to tell me this yesterday.
A lot of the water came, it was runoff from other communities. You know, Lewiston and St. Charles and Utica and all those areas and everything else kind of feed in. We live about a block and a half from Rush Creek. And the block that we are on is the block where the dike starts. Mm-hmm. But there's a 90-degree turn right before it gets to the dike. And for some reason they never put that up. I mean, and that was erected in 1965 or 1967, because there was a large flood back in 65, but it was nowhere near this. I mean, judging from what everybody has said and everything else, this was far and away worse.
It's like such a tame little...
Yeah, yeah, and it's not. Water. I mean, yeah, it... Yeah.
According to the previous owner of this house, in the 65 flood, they took no water in their basement. So, yeah, it's just with the Rush Creek... The sheer volume of water, the bad luck of having trees and things like that come downstream with it, you know, and some 90-degree bends in it, the water couldn't make the corners and just backed up into town.
Yeah, and I mean, there it had been raining for so many days, I mean, kind of on and off and things like that, and then, I mean, they said we got 17 inches in one day, which doesn't surprise me, but you think about it, and I mean, the water is so saturated at that point, it can't hold anything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it couldn't hold, it couldn't hold the trees where they were supposed to be. I mean, the root systems gave way. And so those ended up coming down the creek. There's a gentleman that owns a farm right before the dike starts on the other side of the creek. And he ended up with silos, you know, with a silo that came down and got stuck in the bridge.
One of his silos?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, and so all of those things put together, along with the volume and also along with the fact that the ground had already absorbed whatever it could. I mean, just like I said, made for the perfect storm. Mm-hmm. You know, the water came right over the banks. One of our neighbors across the street was at home at the time, and he said there were four cars that were out in the middle of the street because people were driving. And I mean, they were driving trying to help people get out and, you know, things like that. He said, and it went from, you know, kind of the bottom of the rims of the tires to the middle of the door where he had to call the rescue squads to get people out there, you know, in a matter of seconds. And it just came through. I mean, and it came through with a lot of force. Mm-hmm. You know, the primary path that it took over next to us, I mean, there are a lot of people that lost basement walls just because of the force.
I noticed all of them, but many of these houses on the street on the way up, so mm-hmm. Northview,
yep,
look like they're either new or substantially renovated. Was their damage? Yep.
Oh yeah,
more severe than yours?
Oh yeah, yeah. We were extremely lucky. A lot of it had to do with what kind of foundation you had. We have a solid stone foundation. I mean, so there's 3-inch, you know, 3-foot thick block, concrete blocks, you know, or stone blocks. A lot of the non-reinforced basements are ones that went down. One of the friends that we have that was about three houses down went down into her basement to get her sewing machine, and her husband came after her. She had the sewing machine in her hands, and he ended up getting her upstairs right as the basement wall collapsed. I mean, around just our little, you know, 3-block area, there were probably 6 houses that had at least one wall of basement collapse.
And then, not immediately after the flood, but at least as part of this recovery effort, was there a period where you just, and I mean, I don't mean just you two, but I mean the town in general, and whether you had a feel for it. What was the feel of the town?
The first feel was that everybody wanted to get in here.
Yeah.
I mean, it drove everybody nuts because we weren't technically allowed back in until Thursday. And Thursday it was just to get your house checked over by the inspectors and to take everything out of the fridge and freezer and get it out on the... They gave us bags and we put it out on the doorstep. But everybody was very, very anxious because we wanted to get in here and get it cleaned up. You know, we knew that the other issue was that it was really hot and it was very, very moist outside, and we knew that all that was going to do was breed mold and things like that, and so we wanted to get in. You know, there were some people that had left and had not been able to see what had happened since they'd left. They'd left when the sirens went off on Sunday morning and hadn't been back. Mm-hmm. Most of it was just that idea of we have to get this done. We had so many people come down, volunteers, friends, family members, just come down and help. Mm-hmm. And we were able to start cleaning out that Friday. And it was an amazing sight because nobody stopped. As a matter of fact, it was something you had to be really careful of, because no matter how many people were helping you, we weren't thinking about stopping at all. I mean, we weren't thinking about eating. We weren't thinking about any of those things. We just wanted to get it all out so we could start over again. The American Red Cross would come down and they would be telling people about meals and things like that, and they had the trucks going through. And every time somebody came up to them, they would double check and make sure that they'd given out enough meals, because that was what they were afraid of, is that people weren't going to stop and they weren't going to eat and they weren't going to, mm-hmm. you know, do those kinds of things. The entire town looked like a trash heap. There were skid loaders and front-end loaders running constantly. After that, once people started to be able to clean and that kind of thing, a lot of it was just that question of how are we going to be able to do this financially? Mm-hmm. We're not interested in leaving. We're not interested in just, picking up and moving on. What's going to happen now?
And how were you able to do that financially?
FEMA came through. Apparently, the president was on his way to a fundraiser for a local government, and so he flew over and made sure that we really were a disaster area and declared it. And so we all got on the phones right away, and by that point, they had actually restored phone service. I think that was probably 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks in. Mm-hmm. We called. FEMA was wonderful. I mean, they came out right away.
There's something,
Yeah, FEMA was wonderful. I will say, the one thing is, you have to understand what it is they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And the gentleman that came down and met with us was very honest. And he said, the deal is this. He said, FEMA doesn't pay for your life. They pay for the structure, and they pay for the necessities. He said, and washer and dryer is not a necessity. And, and all these other things that we... I thought of. However, a car seat is a necessity, so if we had one of those that we lost in. So having that conversation was a little odd, because things that you didn't, that weren't the first things on your mind, were the things that they kind of mentioned and stuff. But they were actually very, very good. They had a whole team set up on the hill, and didn't matter what the question was, you could go and you could ask them. And I found them very good to deal with and very responsive, which was nice. Mm-hmm. The other way that we could get funding was through the state, or excuse me, through the SBA, which was the Small Business Association grants. And they were, that was a large frustration for the town.
Yeah. They had to apply for the loan and then be denied?
Exactly.
In order to get the state,
right,
the legislature passed.
Right. Well, because we were all excited. I mean, yeah, there were signs up all over the place, you know, make sure that your congressmen and senators and everybody know that they need to have a special session. So they had the special session, and then they said, well, we'll make the money available, but you have to do all these other things first. Mm-hmm.